Welcome to the third edition of the Grandmasters Chatcast with most worshipful brother Daryl Fremont and myself, Dan Tooker. And without further ado, welcome the current Grandmaster of Iowa, most worshipful brother Daryl Fremont. Daryl, hot off the road, you just got back from Minnesota, what, late last night or the night before?
The night before, and then we had meetings and the DMLA one-day class yesterday at the Scottish Rite here in Des Moines.
All right. Well, let's just go down what you've been up to in the last month. I think it's been about 6 weeks since we've recorded a podcast, so you've been very, very busy. Hard guy to nail down. Let's first talk about all the grand officer receptions that you've been to. How many have you been to in 6 weeks?
Probably five, to be honest with you. It's that part of the year when those things happen on Saturdays. It's a great tribute to those officers that have volunteered their time and said yes to serve the Grand Lodge, and also to the lodges that they come from. So it's just a fun day to honor those men and for what they do. And they do a lot for Iowa Masonry, and we so appreciate them and what their efforts are.
Yeah, and I don't think we can leave out the ladies as well. It's a special moment for them. You know, they might not be in the spotlight, so to speak, but they definitely are present and definitely get the recognition they deserve as well.
Oh, that is so true. I mean, you can always say that behind a good Mason is a better spouse that allows him to do what he does, but to pay tribute to the ladies, certainly it's an event of celebration and fellowship, both for the men and women within our fraternity.
You know, I don't want to put you on the hot spot, but when did these receptions start? Like, what was the idea of the receptions? You know, you mentioned that it's obviously for the Grand Lodge officers, but it also highlights the lodge they come from as well.
Oh, that is true. I don't know the complete history for sure, but I know that it's tradition, and but that's exactly right, because the lodge gives up their member who probably serves as an officer or had been a past master or this or that, certainly helps with the success of that lodge. But they're giving up, you know, time. He's away from those meetings and certainly helping. But, yeah, it's just a time to honor the lodge. The lodges, you know, perform the reception in the lodge room. It's a tiled lodge, and there's activities outside for non-Masons and ladies. But it's a nice event, a nice ceremony, and certainly one of dignity and honor and respect for that Grand Lodge officer.
And did your lady enjoy one of, because they always do something for the ladies, right? When the Masons are in lodge, did she enjoy one particular event that they had done? Because I know they've done charcuterie boards. I said that totally wrong. I don't know how to say that word, but those boards with cheese and meat on it. Mm-hmm. And they've done a lot of different fun things.
Oh, they have. And sometimes, as Grand Master, or sometimes the officers would, oh gosh, we missed a pretty good presentation there. But there's a variety of things. Sometimes of a local flair, something to do with the history. And we actually had one of the receptions here recently in March. Was at a whiskey distillery, and
oh, cool.
I think they got to go on a tour of a whiskey distillery, and pretty interesting stuff. So. And how that distillery got started and things like that. So, yeah, there are a variety of things that they do. I know that Ann has helped out in a couple, talking about her epilepsy program and the epilepsy awareness program.
Right.
You know, they're good things, and they keep it interesting, and it's certainly entertaining for the non-Masons and the ladies that are in attendance.
Okay. Let's go on to the next thing on the list, the Grand Lodge Third Degrees. What's that all about?
Well, we get invited to go to a lodge and perform the second section of third degree. And it's a lot of fun, basically. Sometimes there's you know, programs for ladies, and they come along, but mostly not. It's usually during the week, during a weeknight. But recently, we went to Lodge in Centerville, Jackson Lodge number 42, which is one that I wanted to actually see because they've done a great renovation. But it was really kind of neat. We raised a new Master Mason that day, and his father, during the presentation, presented his son with his own Masonic ring.
Oh, wow. A new one.
And that was special. And then the father turned and gave him another ring, and he says, well, I want you to keep this one in safekeeping. This is your grandfather's Masonic ring.
Wow.
And so that was really special. And not to be outdone, he turned around again, handed him another ring box, and he says, for safekeeping, this is your great-grandfather's Masonic ring.
Wow.
So it was emotional, certainly for a father and a son. It was emotional for everybody that was there, a real touching moment. But it just shows the legacy of this fraternity and certainly the family connections that go on. There's just a rich history of Iowa Masonry, and it was just fun for all of us as Grand Lodge officers to be a part of.
That's an amazing story. I bet there wasn't a dry eye in the house, for sure.
No, it was fantastic, and again, what they've done there. But we've had other close-knit ones. The one we did at Coral Lodge in Carson, Iowa, there was another father-son event, and also an uncle and a grandfather.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
It's just fun to be a part of. It's fun to travel across the state, see the different lodges, meet different brothers that maybe you haven't seen for a while or maybe are just getting to know, to help spread the message, you know, that we're trying to promote this year, getting people back in the game, you know, and living the ritual. And those are just two shining examples of two lodges and Masons that are living the ritual, and they're definitely in the game.
That's awesome. That's a great story. Both of them are. I know that you're a big baseball fan, and baseball is in full swing right now, as well as Lodge Service spring area meetings have begun.
Right. This is spring. We're moving into summer, and baseball season has started. Our Lodge Service Committee has started their spring area meetings, and they have a lot of great information to provide in any of you that are in the areas, and make sure you attend. They have some information basically having to do with some of the code changes that were done at the annual communication last September. And then, but, you know, kind of informational stuff on how to protect the Westgate and other items as far as recruitment, marketing, those type of things to assist lodges. And it's just good information. And they're going to even follow up a little bit further after these are over, and the Lodge Service Committee members will actually be traveling to different lodges and attending their stated meetings to give some kind of education or information on a more one-on-one basis. So I'm really excited about the increase in communication with our subordinate lodges, and hopefully that'll help promote, get people reactivated and reinvigorated, you know, for this year. And it's time to swing for the fences. It's time to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think if you're an officer and you're not attending these meetings, it's a huge disservice because you just learn so much. And, you know, when you go to these meetings, you see people in there of all different ages, and I think everybody gets something from these meetings. So I think it's vital to go to these and take some of these best practices back to your lodge for sure. So I've always enjoyed the ones that I've went to. Well, we mentioned that you had just come back from the Grand Lodge of Minnesota's communication. Now, let's count how many Grand Lodge communications you've been to in less than a year. I'm thinking we're at four or five, right?
Yeah, basically three. I was scheduled to go to two, but due to conflict or illness, I wasn't able to attend two of them.
Okay.
But again, I'll go to Indiana. We've got several coming up in June. And so if I can't go, you know, I'll send a representative to those. And we also have our Grand York Rites coming up in June that mm-hmm. I will be in attendance. I think it's important that the Iowa Grand Master be with the Grand York Rite bodies as they go through their communication. And so, yeah, it's for me, I represent, of course, the Grand Lodge, and I try to do the best I can to get everywhere I can. But sometimes it's just, I can't be at two places at once. But I do have officers that will gladly go if I can't be there.
So is it expected for the Grand Master to go to all these other state communications, or is it a courtesy?
I think it is a courtesy, but you're kind of expected to go, especially the Grand Lodges in our Midwest Conference of Grand Lodges, which, you know, covers Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, North and South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri. We try to get to those, and also Manitoba. But we try to get to those because there are sister jurisdictions, and we have a lot of communication and shared work and shared members mm-hmm. with those Grand Lodges.
So let's go to the next event. That's something very dear to your heart, I know, and is the Grand Master's D-Malay class. And you mentioned that earlier in the podcast. Tell us about that event.
It's just a really neat event. It's an annual event, and certainly it's a time for the state D-Malay officers to come together. They put on both the initiatory degree and also the D-Malay degree. And these young men just always astound me. How they perform the ritual, how they just act as quality young men. And it is because of the precepts of DMLA. I'm a senior DMLA, and I can't say enough about it. But I want to reiterate, and I've talked about this at other events, and I know that with DMLA, I met Seamus was the incoming state master counselor, and I was at a D-Malay event. I think it was an installation over in Altoona, and he says, "Yeah, I'm going to go to Northern Iowa and Cedar Falls, and I want to restart Black Hawk chapter." And I said, "Oh, that's my old chapter," and I said, "Well, if you want to get it going again, I think I might be able to help you with that." So I'm really glad to where we are with Black Hawk chapter, and I think at right now we're back to, I think we have 6 or 7 new young men in that chapter, and we're going through the process of reestablishing that, and I'm really proud of that. But when I talk about it, it takes volunteers, it takes manpower to help sustain our youth groups, and that's not just DMLA, that's Rainbow and also Job's Daughters. And when I talk at different events and shared, I mean, we're restarting 2 chapters in Iowa. Would it be nice if we established 2 assemblies in Iowa, mm-hmm. Rainbow assemblies? Would it be nice to establish or reestablish 2 Bethels in Iowa? And what it takes is the adults to step up and say, yeah, I can help with that, and to see what can happen. It's not always going to be successful, but if we don't step up and get in the game, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and it's amazing the time that these volunteers put in. You know, you always hear soccer moms and soccer dads and travel baseball and all of that. D-Malay is and Rainbow is it to do that. You're pretty much investing all your time in it as well. So. The event that you're speaking of is a great event. I've been there a couple of times. I will say the D-Malay degree is one of my favorite degrees. And seeing these young men perform such a heavy degree, the first time you see it, it's mind-blowing. I went to a D-Malay event about a month ago with a friend, and I just kept telling him how great the degree was, to the point where he was probably tired of me telling him how great the degree is. And then he was blown away when he saw it. So it was great. I saw those guys practicing the first weekend of the Scottish Rite reunion a couple weekends ago. They were practicing down in the Blue Lodge room. So it was really cool to see those guys working so hard at it. So, and then not next week, the following week, the 27th is the 1 day class in Cedar Rapids. I believe I saw that there is a change in location. Is that right?
Right. We had to change the venue. Basically, it was due to a calendaring thing. The Masonic Temple in Cedar Rapids is kind of attached to the Scottish Rite Consistory, and there was a little confusion. Well, the Scottish Rite, they rented out the building, which also included the parking lot. Well, they have a shared parking lot. Well, it kind of just didn't work out, so it has been moved to the Shrine Temple in Hiawatha, El Cahir Shrine. And kind of a nice thing about that is that it's all on one level. Of course, the older buildings have stairs and things like that. And logistically, it should work out just fine. I think at last notice I got was we have 24 candidates, which, you know, be a nice class.
That's a nice class.
And basically, it'll be a full room. I think logistically, they are ready. And we'll have a great day. It should be a lot of fun.
Why did you decide to have a one-day class? I know we've talked about this before, but, you know, for somebody maybe listening that hasn't listened before, you know, it is at your discretion as a Grand Master to decide whether or not there's one-day classes. Why did you say, yeah, let's do it?
Basically, and I know we've talked about this before, there's a perception that, you know, the one-day class, you know, everybody goes through the 3 degrees. They don't get the full experience, which is probably true, but they can go to degrees and hopefully garner some of that at a later time. But statistically, we haven't seen where our retention is any better or worse if someone goes through a one-day class or goes through the traditional method. So it's mostly about what happens with those candidates in a one-day class is when they get back to Lodge, and that's to orientate them, enroll them, take them through proficiency. That's required, but it's a little more than that. So, but that's the important key, is that everyone gets a great experience when they get back to their lodge. They feel welcomed and included and invited, and to keep them coming back. And I think that's the key. But mostly the one-day class helps with men that can't perhaps commit to 3 days, 3 separate days in a week or in a month, or 2 months or 3 months to complete their Master Mason degree. So it's part convenience for the new candidate. And we do have some lodges out there that are struggling to do ritual work. And hopefully we can help them and get people out there to help them to relearn or retool and be able to perform their own degree work.
You know, I was at a one-day class. It's probably been 3 or 4 years ago. It was at the Scottish Rite building in Des Moines. And it was probably 2020 because I think we were still, I remember Wade Sheeler telling everybody to sanitize their hands like every 10 minutes. I don't know if you were there for that one. But what was interesting was I was sitting next to or a couple chairs down from, we were obeying safety laws then. And he had done his entered apprentice and then he had done his fellow craft and then life happened. And he had never done his Master Mason degree. And it was like 20 years. It was something insane. The time between his fellow craft and his Master Mason degree. And he came for the 1 day class and was able to get that done. And the other story that just, it sticks out to me, and I hope I can give it justice, but I was sitting up in the balcony and I was looking down and you have your guide when you have the 1 day class, right? That's the person that you sit with and you know, they hold the Bible and do different things, prompt you and all of that. And the guides were, there was a seat in between the guide and the candidate. And there was a gentleman that was in a wheelchair and he was up there in age, and I kept seeing this younger gentleman sliding across the one chair and whispering into the candidate's ear. And it went on for, like, you know, the first degree, the second degree, and then there was a break. So I had to figure out what was going on, right? So I go down, and you know me, Darrell, I'll introduce myself to anybody. So I introduce myself to these two gentlemen, and it turns out that the older gentleman was the candidate that day, and his son was the guide and kept sliding across, explaining to him what was going on and everything. And it was a lifelong dream of both of them that they both became Masons. And I just thought, what a great, great, great moment. So you can find some really good stories in those one-day classes for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And there's great stories. It's an opportunity. The custodians this year got back into, you know, because of COVID and those type of things, ritual competition. So the winners of that competition will be doing the first section of the third degree, and then the other runners up will be doing the first degree and also the second degree. So it's going to be very good, and we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good day. Before we get to our guests, which I'm very, very excited about, is there a Grand Lodge officer that we're going to highlight this podcast?
Well, I think I highlighted our senior grand steward previously, but I do want to give a shout out to our deputy grandmaster, Right Worshipful Brother Guy McCausland. I met Guy way back, would have been 2010. I was at a reception for an officer when I first served in Clinton, and just hit it off with Guy. And we had some synergy in the fact that I was from Madrid. He knew about Madrid because the guy that he roomed in at Morningside College when playing football was the head football coach at Madrid, and Guy was coaching football at in Comanche. So just kind of got to know him there, would run into him every now and then. And then he served as a senior grand deacon in Bill Crawford's family. And, you know, when I was asked to serve as chairman and knew that I was going to become grand master, well, one of the first picks that you do as a selected officer is your deputy grand master. He serves as the kind of the chief of staff. He's kind of that liaison between the Grand Master, the Grand Secretary, and the Grand Lodge officers. Takes care of the cast, takes care of just numerous, numerous things. And I could have thought of a better person to ask to serve in that capacity than Guy McCausland. And he's just been a peach. We got to know both Guy and Shelley, of course, when he served with Bill Crawford, both Ann and I, and got to know Guy and Shelley, and just a real synergy there. And I can't say a good enough things about him. He's done a great job. He continues to do a great job. Really, really handles everything that's thrown at him. And, you know, we have fun. We joke, you know, and he keeps everybody kind of light. And, you know, we try this year, and I'm sure other years too, but for sure for this year, we try to keep everything fun, keep it light, you know, and he, we kind of rub, you know, elbow each other. Well, hey, you know, that wasn't your best day, but he's a great coach. He's a great encourager. He's a great supporter and promoter of the fraternity. And, I can't say enough good things about him, and certainly my year would not be going as well as it is right now without Guy McCausland.
Well, that's great, and you got to have fun, especially with as much time as you guys are spending with each other. You got to enjoy it, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So is there a particular lodge that we'd like to highlight this podcast?
Well, I think I mentioned before Jackson Lodge, but Coral Lodge out in Carson. You know, it's not so much the lodge buildings, of course. You know, I think it's the lodge is the members, and certainly the Masons that belong to it. But Carson Coral Lodge has a good core of Masons there. They're in it for the right reasons, and they do a great job. And the lodges that we visit during the receptions, same. They're in it for the right reasons, and we just so appreciate being able to promote and hopefully encourage cheerlead. That's kind of our job, is right. to you know, beat the drum of Iowa Masonry and get people excited.
You mentioned, was Jackson the one that you said that they actually did some renovations?
Yes, it's amazing. One of the brothers, I think he's currently the worship master, bought the building, and their facility, the lodge and the dining hall, are upstairs, just a total remodel, sprucing up, and they just got the kitchen and dining hall completed before we got there. But what they've done is just amazing. And I think part of that, they've got something they're proud of, something they can show off. And they've actually raised 12 new Master Masons within this time frame. So that's pretty impressive.
That's very impressive. Did they do it more modern, or is it more, you know, in the historic sense?
They definitely kept it in the historic sense, but not only is it paying dividends for the lodge, but it's also paying dividends for their Eastern Star chapter as well. Because when I was there, they were setting up after we were done for a Eastern Star school the next day. But yeah, they're seeing an influx of new membership in the Eastern Star as well.
That's great. All right. Well, our guest has been patiently waiting and very excited. I think, Daryl, you are the person to introduce the guest, because you've spent your fair share of time with her.
Well, I wish to say that I was still working in the office, but, you know, there's a part of me that says I'm sure glad I'm not. Julia was hired to replace Bill Crawford, who retired, and I've had some interaction with Julia, certainly. I do get to the office from time to time. Certainly excited for her energy and the things that she's doing at the library. That's why I thank you, Julia, for coming on as a guest, because there's just some exciting things that are happening at the Iowa Masonic Library and Museum. And I'm just so excited for her to be able to tell the story.
Julia, you are the assistant librarian and curator, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so what is that? Like, what are your, I guess, your job title? What is that? Like, what do you do?
So, I'm technically the assistant, because the Grand Librarian in Iowa Code is the Grand Secretary. That dates all the way back to T.S. Parvin. So that's not something that we're going to be changing anytime soon. So I'm happy to be the assistant. And then the curator, so that means that I'm over the museum. So the librarian portion of the assistant librarian just means that I am the custodian of all of the books that are in our care, and all of the artifacts and museum pieces that are in that giant, beautiful marble building. So I have a background in museum studies with public history. So public history is history outside of the classroom. So this would be like your national park system, museums, archives, that kind of thing. So I don't have a background in library science. So luckily, Bill Krueger took very good care of the library. So I just kind of upkeep it. But my plans in the future are really to completely shake things up with the museum, change things around, make new exhibits. But that'll be a sort of a long goal. Right now we're focusing on cataloging, make sure I know where everything's at, and then going from there.
The cataloging has been going on for years, right? I mean, I know that I visited Daryl several years ago, and they were doing the cataloging and all of that. Is that an ongoing process, or because we keep getting stuff in, or is it we're behind and it just hasn't been cataloged yet?
It's a little bit of both. It's an ongoing process, because I get phone calls at least 3 times a week through the Grand Lodge landline. My dad three or my grandpa three times over. He just passed away and I have all of this stuff. What do I do with it? And then, or I'll get calls from lodges that'll say, well, we're going to consolidate. I don't want this stuff. Or what should I do with this stuff? And then it's my job to be the bad guy and say, no, I'm sorry. In the code, it's your responsibility to keep track of your history. I keep track of the Grand Lodge's history, but Command's Lodge, if something happens to you, so sorry. Got to keep up with your stuff. But we, back in last August, we got a new museum software called Pass Perfect, which is pretty much the number one museum software out there. And I've been slowly filtrating things from our old system into our new system and making sure everything is sort of up to date and we're on par with the other museums in the area and around the world. And that kind of segues into later in the year, the Iowa Masonic Library and Museum will be hosting the Masonic Library and Museum Association's meeting for this year. We're hoping for late summer, early fall, so like August area. And so that's going to be, there are 27 libraries and or Masonic museums in the United States, mm-hmm. And Canada. And so we're hoping to get a really large crowd. Last year it was in Washington, D.C. at the George Washington National Memorial. And we kind of had a short notice of when the meeting was going to be. So it was a bit of a hybrid virtual and in person. We're still going to have a virtual aspect, but I'm hoping that we'll get, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 libraries that'll come out. That'll be exciting, but, you know, we'll see.
Where does our museum fit in all this? Because, you know, we're very proud of it in Iowa. But, you know, as somebody that has come here in the last couple of years, I mean, where do we rank among all these other museums out there?
Everyone, Iowa boasts that, you know, we're number one in the United States. We kind of fight back and forth with the Grand Lodge of England at London off of Queen Street on who's the best in the world. So I truly believe once I finish cataloging and I have all the books, everything taken care of and all the artifacts taken care of, then I'm going to call Martin Cherry, who's a librarian over there, and say, how many books and artifacts do you have so we can, you know, settle this argument? But that, you know, that'll be a few years from now. But so I definitely believe we're number one, if not number two. I do think we kind of fight a little bit with California just simply because they have the ability to hire like a 50-person staff and it's just me. So me and sometimes Craig as the librarian, our grand secretary. So, you know, I'll come in and be like, okay, I have the following problems. I need a sounding board or I need the following things. How do I fix this? And, you know, he's the calm in the storm with the mind of, cause he's in the middle of doing something else and he'll pause and, you know, help me fix a problem. And then I'll be like, okay, I'll come back in 20 minutes with a new problem. So
how does it rank? Because you just said it can't be just the number of artifacts. It's got to be like some of the artifacts that are actually in the building. Daryl was nice enough to show me some of those. Is it the quality of artifacts that is in the building or is it just a quantity thing?
It's a little bit of quality and quantity. It also has a lot to do with the amount of researchers that we get. I'm not sure how many researchers California gets a year, but if we're going off of hybrid, so people emailing me and asking for research pieces, you know, whether it be proceedings or just, you know, I'm looking for something on Pythagoras, what do you have? Then I think we're up there because I get an email a day, if not multiple, just for proceedings, for all kinds of stuff. Because in our catalog, in the library, we have proceedings from every jurisdiction that has masonry. If we don't have an updated copy of, you know, say we have, you know, the last one was in 2010, it's relatively easy for me to just reach out. And I am in a lucky position where a lot of times if you're reaching out to other jurisdictions, it needs to be grand secretary to grand secretary. But I'm in the position where if I reach out to the grand secretary, it's not a breach of protocol or anything inappropriate. Where if I just reach out and I'm like, hey, We're missing some artifacts, or not artifacts, we're missing some proceedings, we're missing, you know, do you have a history book that you'd like to include? I'm in that position where people just kind of leap over bounds to try and give me new things. So I think that's something Iowa Masons should be really proud of, and I wish more Iowa Masons took advantage. Now, it is sort of an unfortunate caveat that we're no longer lending books out because books stopped coming back. And at some point, you know, the books that are make us who we are. And if I have to trace down every book and I don't get them back, then, you know, we're not going to have a library anymore.
So you're very involved in this, and I can see the passion just coming. I mean, you're almost levitating in your chair. I mean, how did you get involved in this? How did you find this position?
So I have a very large Masonic background. So I grew up in Alabama, and my dad is sort of what I refer to as a super Mason. So he is in every Masonic group, every offended body that you can possibly belong to, including ones that people have to die and then you get invited to take their place. And he is currently running for the bottom of the line for the Grand Encampment. So if anyone out there listening can vote at Grand Encampment in August on the 20th at 1 p.m., I've now learned, vote for Jim McGee. There's my plug. You're welcome, Dad. But then I was in Rainbow. I'm a past Grand Worthy the Advisor. I was active with DMLA as well. I was a past state sweetheart. And so Masonry has a very big part of my life, big part of my heart. And when I graduated with my master's in 2019, I graduated in December of 2019. So I didn't have a job. I didn't have a job immediately lined up, and then COVID happened. So I wasn't able to get a job in my field. So I just kind of got a job. And then my dad was at a meeting somewhere that Craig was at, and just happened to mention to Craig, hey, Craig happened to mention to my dad, hey, do you know anyone, you know, in your travels that has a library degree or a museum degree? And he's like, I know my daughter. And so I'm not going to lie. Originally, when I was hired, I thought I was like a nepotism hire. I thought it was just they hired me just to hire me. And then I kind of had a heart to heart with Craig. And I'm like, you only hired me because of my dad. And he was like, no, I hired you because you earned this. And I was like, oh, OK, right. Well, pretend I didn't do that.
That's great. Now, you also talked about some of the displays that you want to put on. What can we look forward to?
So the next exhibit that is coming is going to be Masons in Space. So I sort of teased it a little bit in the last bulletin that came out. I guess I fibbed a little because in the bulletin I said it would be open by April, and it is now April and it's not up yet because there's an Iowa PBS station that is doing a segment on the library and museum. So I don't want to take anything down until they're finished. So when they're finished, I'll definitely be able to publicize it on the Facebook page and all kinds of, you know, fun ways to get it out there. But I don't want to take anything down and then there be a hole. But Masons in Space are the next one. And I've had a really good relationship with some of the other jurisdictions that have had these Masons, like the Grand Lodge of New Mexico and Texas. And I'm really excited about. So the Grand Lodge of Texas, when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were on the moon, they instituted a lodge on the moon, the Lodge of Tranquility number 2000. And so I reached out to both the Grand Lodge of Texas and the Lodge of Tranquility. And I was like, hi, I'm doing this exhibit. Is there anything, you know, you guys can provide for me? You know, even if we have to pay, like what, you know, what can we do? And the Lodge of Tranquility bent over backwards to give me stuff. And I actually got a dues card that has Buzz Aldrin's name on it. So that's the most exciting thing
that
for me.
Cool.
We had to kind of tweak it a little bit because since as long as you're a Mason, you can belong to the Lodge of Tranquility. You can petition to affiliate. So it has on their regular dues cards, it has your address on it. So we had to take off Buzz Aldrin's address because I don't want to dox an astronaut. So, So we took that off, and I also have a dues card from the secretary of the lodge. And then, here in Cedar Rapids, Collins Rockwell Aerospace had a big portion to do with the communications of the landing on the moon.
Right.
So I have a big segment on them as well, and what they've done. So Masons in Space is next. And then after that, still kind of taking suggestions, but that I tend to leave them up for a year so that they can be highlighted in the April bulletin. And that way it gives, you know, Iowa Masons and Masons in other jurisdictions time to come and visit. So the next kind of exciting, we're getting an artifact soon. So Don Mosier, who's a past grandmaster for Iowa, I think it was when he was grandmaster, but he had a Masonic motorcycle commissioned that has all kinds of beautiful symbolism and all that kind of stuff for masonry on it. And his wife, Carol, reached out and said, you know, I don't want to part with this, but I really want it to be where it needs to be, like with us.
Right.
So we're going to take some display cases down, one or two that just kind of had some dishes in them that I wasn't super fond of anyway. So we're going to take the dishes down and move those display cases out and put the motorcycle in the back of the room and get a really good sign made. And then since we are open to the public and, you know, I get a lot of tours for non-Masonic people, I'm going to really break down, you know, oh, this is a leaf of acacia. What does that mean to a Mason? This is the level. This is the plum. What does this mean? And really explain it on a bare bones level. So I'm really excited to get that motorcycle in the coming weeks so I can start working on that.
That's awesome. If somebody wants to come and visit and get maybe a tour by you, because I think you'd be amazing, how can they do that?
Just reach out to the Grand Lodge. So you can call. 319-365-1438. All the time when I call people, I just have the number memorized. So call and ask for me, and I'll set you up with a tour, or you can email me. So that's just librarian@gl-iowa.org. And just let me know you want a tour. I'm pretty flexible. I tend to be able to drop things, but I do ask for appointments just so, because I'm cataloging, I'm doing all kinds of stuff, kind of running around like a chicken, trying to get everything taken care of for you guys. So I want to make sure that I have the time to set things down before you come in. Make sure, of course, I have the lights on and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Daryl, this is great. This is a great guest.
Yeah. Julia's, I tell everybody, and I'm going to start professing this, is that Julia Wells is the Caitlin Clark of Masonic Libraries and Museums. So glad that she's in Iowa. Julia, just on a side note, I know that you've been working with some interns and volunteers. I mean, is that helpful? Do you need more? Maybe you could just kind of talk about that a little bit.
For sure. I will always take volunteers. The only sort of caveat with that is we want to make sure you can pass a background check. And I completely understand, you know, all Masons theoretically pass a background check when you're in your investigation stands. But it's really just for the safety of the artifacts that we ask for the background check. So depending on the person who's volunteering, depends on what I will have you help me with. So if you're someone who's really great with computers, then I'll just have you do data entry with me. But if you're someone who's, you know, not really great with typing, or you're just not really great with technology, then, you know, you can help me move artifacts around, because definitely at some point, once I get things cataloged, I'm going to rearrange all the artifacts too. Besides where they're displayed, I want to be able to say, this is the Yorkrite case. This is the, you know, Knights Templar case. I want to be able to, so I'm not having to look around and be like, oh, case 2, drawer 5, and go that way. I have a volunteer from UNI right now. I work with all of the colleges around. So I work with CO here in Cedar Rapids. I work with the University of Iowa and UNI in their field experience class and different history, you know, internship classes. So UNI is there right now. We're doing the field experience class, and the student is just a history student. He doesn't necessarily, he actually wants to be a teacher. And he's like, I just, you know, kind of wanted to have something to fall back on. And so it was nice to be able to mentor a student and say, you know, this is what you can do with a history degree, because I was like that when I was in my undergrad, you know, what could I do with my history degree? But yes, yeah, so we're working on getting internships. We're working with CO right now to get a scholarship. Like the Grand Lodge of Indiana has set up to where they pay the tuition for the student.
Yep.
And so it gives an incentive for the student to want to come to us instead of just, you know, volunteer hours and that kind of thing. So we're really excited with that. And so if anybody has a whole bunch of background in grant writing out there in the podcast verse and wants to, you know, help me out with that, then definitely let me know, because I'm kind of drowning figuring out how to write a grant proposal on getting a scholarship. So.
All right. Very good. Well, Julia, it's a pleasure to meet you, and hopefully I'll get to meet you in person soon.
It was nice to meet you, too.
Daryl, as we kind of wrap things up, what do you have coming up on your calendar?
Oh, we have some third degrees coming up, and we're excited about those, and some more lodge officers' receptions in May. And again, I get to travel over to the Grand Lodge of Indiana. Looking forward to that. I thought we were going to have to... parade up in Mason City, but I'm not sure if that's on the calendar or not at this point. But looking forward to the warmer weather in the spring,
yeah.
Summer, make it travel that much easier, and just getting out there and be with Masons. We do have a golf outing in June. That's on the 24th in Marshalltown at the American Legion Golf Course. Talking with the committee, we're going to have a lot of raffle prizes and that are going to be good. The proceeds will go to the Iowa Masonic Charities. And then I also have two family-friendly events, and they're cornhole or bags tournaments. And so we're going to do one in Hiawatha up in the Cedar Rapids area, kind of the eastern Iowa, and then one in Altoona. But same kind of scenario, raffle prizes, just a good day of fun. Because anybody can throw a bag and hit a board. So,
okay, very good. Well, Daryl, until next month, thank you for your time, and we look forward to catching up. And that will be podcast number 4 at that point. So, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you, Julia. Enjoy your weekends, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, too.